Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the only radio program with infinite dignity. We are delighted that you are here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we got a little bit of flannel panel for you today where I get to gather with two of the best, finest people you can gather with. We all put on flannel shirts, and then we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Who should I introduce first? I never know who. Let's start with Chris Jack. Chris Jack, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris Jack.
How are you, Cy?
Very well. Very well, thank you.
Good. I'm looking forward to cruising the St. Lawrence River with you in June with Joe Heschmeyer.
Let's just turn this whole hour into an ad for our cruise.
Well, you know, I have been looking forward to this cruise, but then yesterday we sat down with our friends William and Amy Fahey from the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Marymount, New Hampshire.
Right.
And I thought we had the good outline of a program, but then after our meeting yesterday, this is going to be the most coherent and rich cruise program we've ever had.
Yeah.
It just everything from the North American Mart or Kateri Tekakwitha to Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And if you don't think those things are connected, you need to come on our cruise.
Well, no man is an island, as I like to say. I almost gave out the phone number. Our other guest for the flannel panel, I don't think that that's flannel. I don't know. I'm not sure.
There's no such thing as short sleeve flannel.
Apologist Joe Heschmeyer. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Asia before beauty in terms of the ordering. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I will echo, Amy Fahey made a reference to one of my favorite pieces by Flannery O'Connor, which is actually an introduction that she wrote in honor of a young girl who had died that talks about Nathaniel Hawthorne's daughter. And it's really just this fascinating, moving, beautiful piece. And it sounds like she's going to mention it the cruise in a way that I think will introduce other people to it.
By the way,
so I'm excited about that.
June 29th to July 6th, leaving for Montreal, ending in Boston. Go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com if you want to come. Yes.
Rose Hawthorne was just taken from servant of God to venerable.
She's is that just a matter of a decision? There's no miracle involved.
It'd be good
like
if there were like a Catholic apologist on this show.
How do you get from servant of God to venerable?
Venerable?
Well, first of all, let's all shoot for servant
Extreme
of God.
Holiness.
See if we can get there. Extreme holiness. Okay. Yeah. It's like, how do you get to
practice? Exactly. how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
All right. So we're going to look at the news of the world from a Catholic perspective today. We don't always agree with one another. As a matter of fact, I think the show is best when we don't agree with one another. So I'm going to.
I disagree.
That you're wrong about that.
He was being funny.
He was trying to be funny. I would say, let's make clear distinctions. It's important to make clear distinctions. Did you go to QT to get a giant drink?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's water, for the record. Quick trip. Midwestern chain, ice water, and, you know.
That is a big cup. You can't even get one that big at 7-Eleven. We don't even have cups that big here.
No, they probably regulate that, but
California.
It's great. I feel very hydrated. So,
I saw this comedian the other day saying how well hydrated young people are today. She goes, "This must be the best hydrated generation in the history of the world." She goes, "I didn't drink any water till I was 35. I was like, "That's how I feel." Like, nobody ever made you drink any water.
You can't walk around this office without the girls with their designer.
They're chained to a bucket of water. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
There is a young lady who works for us who will remain nameless, who has multiple Stanleys.
Really?
That's like a luxury good. We had a Stanley that my wife is convinced got stolen.
Probably.
That someone came in and stole nothing but our Stanley.
Came in the house, looked around and said, "I'll take the water mug."
Allegedly on the porch. Yeah. Allegedly on the porch, which still feels brazen. If someone's willing to go on your porch to steal a Stanley Cup and it's not hockey, I don't know. That feels like a lot.
That does feel brazen. But that's not the first topic we're going to get to. We're going to talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And I thought we would start with this because it's fun to start with audio. And we have audio from Bill Maher. You guys are familiar with Bill Maher, the HBO. He does a Politically Incorrect on HBO. I must say, not a fan of Bill Maher. Haven't really followed the show, but every now and then somebody will be like, this is how I know what I know about Bill Maher. Somebody sends you a clip and goes, "Did you see what Bill Maher said?"
He has.
I rouse myself to caring, but
he has some natural gifts.
He's kind of, doesn't he have kind of an irascible persona? I'm the grumpy guy that'll say the truth nobody else will say. Is that kind of the persona he has cultivated?
Yeah. I think there's a little more than that. There's an intelligence to the guy. He's not a dope.
Uh-huh. I mostly know him from...
His takes on religion are singularly bad.
Yeah, he
in a
seems
way
dumb
that
when
distills
he talks about religion.
Almost every bad argument about religion and puts them in one very smug persona. He's a very fun person to battle against on religious questions. There's a... an early 2000s episode he did with Roth Doffett of the New York Times on religion and violence. And Doffett just takes him to school. I mean, it's amazing watching him just debunk one after another of Marf's claims, while Marf seems totally unfazed by facts. It's actually impressive.
Well, I must say, too, I do I like shows that are conversations. Even, I mean, I know these programs are contrived and, you know, the audience cheers for one side and boos the other side and all that. Morton Downey Jr. kind of stuff.
Joe
reaction
doesn't
at
know
all.
Who
no
Morton,
idea
Downey,
who Morton
Jr.
Downey Jr. is.
Was he Iron Man?
Look him up, Morton Downey Jr. He's the guy that started it all. But before
there was Jerry Springer, there was Morton Downey Jr.
Right, but so I like shows that have conversation on them, and I do admire that. But
he has a consistency, though.
He
insists that liberals be consistent about their principles. He calls out the left from time to time about their inconsistencies.
Well, I feel like we're going to be talking about the left quite a bit on this show because there are other stories we're going to get to that have to do with media bias and that kind of thing. And there is the honorable left, and we often forget that because there is such a growth in the last, I don't know, decades of the dishonorable left. You know, like the honorable left was a pro-life left, for example. The honorable left was an anti-war left. Now we got a pro-abortion, pro-war left. So maybe he's calling out some of that change.
I think the establishment left has always been pro-war, to tell you the truth. I mean,
really?
Yeah, I think there've always been students and protesters, but most of our wars were set up by liberals.
Oh, that's interesting. Because it's a more adventurous. Let's try something new, and war is
no, that's not it at all.
It's
liberals are busybodies, and
the ultimate
way to be a busybody is to invade someone and try to fix them.
Yeah, we have tried to fix too many people. We have tried to fix too
almost
many
all
people.
Of them.
We have tried to fix almost all the people? Is that
I'm just saying almost everyone we've tried to fix, that was a bad idea.
Well, that's not just war. I mean, just war is not about fixing other people.
No, it isn't. But that is how we prosecute war now and have for centuries.
But Bill Maher said some quite striking things, and I think we'll start the audio. So he's on the show. He's on the show with his own program with Piers Morgan and then a woman named Jillian
Was this
Tett.
Show from early 2000s?
No, I think it's very...
I mean, like, Piers Morgan and Bill Maher haven't been relevant in, like, 15 years, I feel like.
I feel like Bill Maher has been... like, he's been more in the news lately. Like for some reason, he's...
Maybe so.
And then the woman is Gillian Tett from Financial Times or Wall Street Journal or I can't remember where, and some British university. So two British people and Bill Maher, and this discussion came around to abortion, and this is what Bill Maher had to say.
Not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing, or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-life, pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am.
Wow.
I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not
is
sure
that
you're
not your
much.
Position if you're pro-choice?
Isn't that mainly because you don't like children? I mean,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. I mean, but if you are, you said you're pro-choice. Mm. That's your position too.
And there you can see a look of pained horror on the face of Piers Morgan.
Well, he called him out.
Yeah, because that is this position.
It is. I mean, if you're pro-choice, you're for murder.
Comedians have been calling this out. Louis C.K. famously did it when he said, abortion's not murder. Well, it's kind of murder. Well, actually, it's 100% murder. And then he talked about how he was okay with that. And then, what's his name?
And he said he it was murder, but he was glad it was available for his daughters.
Yeah, and I can't remember. Now I'm forgetting the name of that comedian, but it'll come to me. Chris Rock. It was Chris Rock that said that. Mm. And so this has become a kind of, in the comedy world, because I do think in a weird way, comedy is about kind of prodding people with truths they don't want to hear sometimes. But first, let me just get your takes on that take. Joe, go ahead. You start us, because...
Yeah, I think there's something really ghastly about it, but also something sort of refreshingly honest about it. That first, I guess there's two points. One, everyone, regardless of where you stand on abortion, should realize that there's one critically important question. Is abortion murder or not? Because if it's not, then no one cares about it. Like, no one has reason to care about it. If it turns out what's, you know, growing inside of the body of a pregnant woman is just like some organ we'd never heard of that then turns into a human being kind of magically at birth. Well, sorry for all the debate. We should have known abortion was okay the entire time. I mean, if you want to get a kidney removed or replaced, or I don't know. I mean, like, those things are not things that we're going to mess with your life. But on the other hand, if it isn't like that, if it's more like killing your neighbor, because that's literally what's happening, well, then we have a strong interest in regulating that, not because we want to regulate your body. I mean, in the same way that if you were regularly driving over school children in your car, it isn't because of our obsession with automotive regulation that we would say this should not be happening.
That's right, Joe.
And it's ridiculous to pretend, why are you so obsessed with cars? And it's like, not really about the car at all. Like, not really, you know, like, it's just about the murder. And so the first thing he says, I think everyone, regardless of where you stand, should grapple with that. Picking out, you know, sexists on one side or the other is bad faith argumentation. You can find people who are misogynistic pro-lifers. You can find people who are misogynistic pro-choicers. I mean, Hugh Hefner and that ilk were disgusting to women and wanted abortion to be legal in pursuit of some pretty sick anti-woman kind of visions of the world. That doesn't invalidate the stronger pro-abortion or pro-choice argument. So you can't just take the low-hanging fruit. You have to actually deal with the arguments each side's making. And So I would just say, wherever you fall on the issue, that's a cheap rhetorical move. It's not worth the actual debate. And yet when I read the arguments made by people who are pro-choice, I'm astonished at the number of times that it's either A, you just hate women, or B, you're legislating based on what your holy book says. And it's like, only if you mean the thou shalt not kill part. But I thought we were okay with that being a shared moral basis. You know, it isn't like There's some book in the Bible that has an embryological, you know, chart that explains, you know, when human life begins. That is a scientific question. And once science has established pretty darn conclusively that life begins at conception, okay, there's a unique human organism scientifically. Now, there's a moral question, should you kill innocent people? But you don't need to be a Christian to get that, except apparently if you're Bill Maher. So, again, on the first part, I totally agree with him. I think it's an important, valuable point. On the second part, I do think it's striking that a growing number of people on the pro-abortion side of the question, I think it's fair to say pro-abortion here, acknowledge that this is murder and just say they're fine with it. And that is the most disturbing position one could hold. Like, the person who is delusional enough to say this is just a clump of cells, they're mistaken. The person who says this is murder and I'm okay with it has sunk beneath, like, the level of a dignified human argument.
I just want to say, when you say it's a scientific question, I think it's important to say this. We know it's a scientific question because we can name the scientists who discovered it. It was Ernst von Baer in 1827 in Germany, identified the contact of sperm with egg as the origin of human life. And no one has ever refuted what Ernst von Baer in eight. So we are now 200 years into knowing how human life begins. Go ahead.
I actually welcome Mayer's remark. I'm not as horrified by it. Of course, sure, it's horrifying. I actually think there's more hope in Mayer's remark than there is in the people who are even when they know.
Yes, well said. Yeah.
Even when they know. So Joe, I guess I might disagree with you a little bit, because I don't think there's anybody who claims to be pro-choice who really thinks it's a clump of cells.
I've met people who've converted on this issue. I know one woman who was Christian, but she was more or less like, I wouldn't do it kind of pro-life, where, you know, it was that fuzzy in the middle spot a lot of people are. And then she became pregnant and with her first daughter, and was horrified because she suddenly knew at a very experiential level that there was another living being inside of her.
I think the
I know some people who are in that category.
Well, there's knowing and there's knowing, though. There are levels of knowing, and among the levels is knowing the implications of the thing that you already know. Many of us have had this experience. Yeah, I knew that it was wrong to drive unsafely, but I didn't really grasp the implications till I hurt someone, or till we do that all the time.
I think with human life, it isn't that complicated, but I'm going to say that it's a relatively small percentage of pro-life, pro-choicers, and I understand that's a broad demographic, but who actually think it isn't a human person. At this point, I just don't. But so I think I can have a conversation with Bill Maher.
Right, yes.
Because, as both of you have observed, if there's a point of departure, we agree, it's homicide. Now, you can say, Bill, it's justifiable homicide, and I can say, no, it's not justifiable. But that actually is the beginning of a conversation. But if we can't agree what the thing is, if we can't agree what abortion does or what a baby is, then there's no possibility of a conversation. So, look, I mean, he is a ghastly fellow, or he says ghastly things, but he's working off of this sort of Rousseau script, and this I think informs all of his thought. If I desire something, I have a right to it.
Yeah,
yeah. But I will say one thing.
There was a guy that thought of that before Rousseau.
Yes.
You know his name?
Yes. Yes. And he came to a bad end.
Yes.
He's still doing a lot of damage. And there's one more thing I would say, just a technical point here. It's very possible in the United States to have different laws in different states.
Oh, let's take the break and come back to that, because that Bill Maher challenges not just the pro-choice person by saying this is murder. He challenges pro-life people who say, I want a 15-week ban, or I want this to be left to the states. Let's take that up when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN Radio is seeking a dynamic radio producer to join the EWTN Radio team in Irondale, Alabama. The right candidate will be a passionate, multi-skilled, talented professional who can manage and direct all aspects of producing world-class programming and play an integral part in Mother Angelica's mission. If this is you or someone you know, email a resume and cover letter, including salary requirements, to humanresources@ewtn.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, in studio with Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, and joined via technology with Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers. We're all wearing our flannel shirts because it's a flannel panel where we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Could we play just the first? I'll maybe give you a signal when to turn it off, but I want to hear what Bill Maher said. I just hear again what Bill Maher said about why have a 15-week ban? If we could just play Bill Maher again first.
Not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states?
Go ahead, Chris. What do you make of that argument?
Well, in fact, that is the federal principle that informed at one point the construction of the United States government. I mean, it's sovereign states had different laws. Some enslaved.
Yeah, if you can't do abhorrent things to human beings in the name of states' rights, what can you do?
Okay. So the effect of this is that the central government grows larger and the sovereignty of the states is diminished. I would prefer leaving this matter to the states. I think people have more hope of affecting change.
Well, that's the thing is you
in their state.
Like, I think that we can't neglect the fact that we have a voting populace, and we have to work on that voting populace. And it might actually. I mean, while Bill Maher is correct that if this is murder, it should just be illegal everywhere, in all places, and all times. There is the question of strategically, how do you get to that point? And you're going to have to convince people of that, unless you have some kind of mind control or giant weapons. You have to convince people of this, and the way to do that is probably state by state.
Yes, yes. I think that Trump is someone's helped him come up with a fairly clever dodge. But if he really believes that, then that is federalism. That is how the United States was constructed. It isn't really anymore. That's just why it kind of rings a little hollow.
But isn't it acceptable? Is it acceptable in morally, as far as a political movement goes, to work for incremental change if you sincerely believe you can't get absolute change?
Oh my gosh, Si, you are opening the argument on the pro-life side. I agree with you. I think it would be better if half as many babies were killed.
Yeah, that does seem to. Joe, I wonder what your take is.
Yeah, John Paul II explicitly says exactly that, that you can work for incremental change while being committed to all abortion, not just being illegal, but not existing. Like, you can want the complete abolition of abortion and still realize in the current political climate, here's what we can realistically get. You know, maybe it's such and such a weak ban in this state. Maybe it's something a little better, a little worse in this other state. And you are reducing, even if you can't eliminate the problem of abortion, you can reduce the problem of abortion. So we don't have to take the position that, you know, no one's life is saved until everyone's life is saved. And so you can do, as with so many things, you know, you, in the same way that at a state by state level, you could fight for abolition without saying we have to get a national ban right away. And that can change the culture. Because one of the things I think we've kind of run headlong into the wall on here is that a lot of people said they were pro-life until push came to shove.
Yeah,
and then they said, yeah, you know, I'm pro-life, but I'm going to vote for abortion to be legal. It's like, then don't call yourself pro-life. Like, get a different term, like, I'm a coward. Or,
well,
you know,
or
I believe one thing and do another.
Or, you know, even if you just said, I can't come up with a term. I'm not going to try to come up with a good term for that. But
I will say this. The difficulty with the state-by-state solution is that neither side is going to be committed to just letting it be resolved at a state level.
Yeah, that's why I say it is not really how the government functions now.
Yeah.
But it is the federal principle that informed the creation of our natural
government. Well, and not even just at a federal level. You've got things like Women on Waves, the international abortion ships, where they'll go outside of countries that have abortion bans, like Ireland, and they will pick up women and go perform abortions in international waters and then bring them back.
Mother of God.
And so, yeah, it's like, it's very, I mean, it's at a point where even if you had a federal ban on abortion, there would be attempts to circumvent it. Mexico.
Sure.
International waters, all sorts of things.
Well, I see a lot of gloating on cable news and on NPR and these various places, and it's disguised gloating, but very minimally disguised. Their delight that Republicans are losing everywhere because they won. They're like the dog that caught the bumper, I heard one of them say. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're wrong. I think that the pro-life position in many ways is a losing position. At the moment, we've always been in this for the long. I mean, none of us who lived through 50 years of waiting for Roe versus and fighting for Roe versus Wade being overturned thought that this was going to be something that's not a whole lifetime commitment. But they are right. Pro-life position politicians are in a tough position now.
Yeah, I mean, you can see who actually has principles on this issue and who doesn't. Likewise with the IVF issue. Right now, a lot of people don't have pro-life positions on IVF or on abortion. And you can either be a leader and try to change the culture, try to make good laws and shape the national conversation, or you can just chase what the polls say. And I understand that a person who's principled on the issue might face a tougher re-election, might lose their office. But what's the point of having a political office if you can't live by principle? You know, what's the point of having that if you can't protect the most defenseless members of the population?
Yep, that's exactly right. And it will chase many people out of the political arena. I know there's people that won't get in now. We talked to one recently, Chris and I did, just not going to do politics because I can't swear.
He was concerned for his own.
All right, right back. We'll continue.
None of you believe.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
As we read the Gospels, every Christian faces the question again and again, what does Jesus mean? Getting the answer right is critical to both growth in holiness and fruitful evangelization. Want to know Jesus better so you can introduce him to your friends? Then it's time to get serious about understanding his words. Why not join Catholic Answers for our 10th annual Apologetics Conference? Learn from me the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ, September 26th through 29th, right here in sunny San Diego. Learn from our guests, Dr. Scott Hahn and Kimberly Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, Father Sebastian Walsh, Billy Junker, Father Paul Check, and, of course, all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. It'll be 4 days of fun, faith, fellowship, and a live radio show. Seats are still available, but going fast, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today.
None of you believe.
Conversation about God's truth along with guests and your calls. I'm Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, and I invite you to join me tomorrow for Beacon of Truth on most of these EWTN stations. Now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. The one thing that I most appreciated out of Bill Maher's extraordinary candor, where he said, of course, abortion is murder. I'm just okay with murder. We've got too many people and we won't miss you. That's what he said. That's a paraphrase, of course, but not much of a paraphrase. It's pretty close to a direct quote. And but I did appreciate that he said, why do pro-life people always say, pro-choice people always say pro-life people hate women? He goes, they don't hate women. And like, the majority of pro-life people are women. Are this idea that this is a war on women or something to not want to kill babies or not want to permit the killing of babies is a dumb idea, and I appreciated him calling it out.
It is. I mean, it's insulting to all of the pro-life women. It's insulting to anyone with two or three functioning brain cells who can understand the complexity of the issue at hand or can listen to what the other side is actually saying without jumping to baseless conclusions. I mean, it's a silly position that I'm glad to hear him, you know, call out.
Do you think the issue carries sort of a disproportionate level of influence in the political conversation? I mean, is there really somebody who's going to say, you know what, I would be for the lower taxes that the Republican Party seems to prefer, or I would be for more protection for American man or whatever it is. But what's really important to me is that some woman I don't know can kill her baby. So that's how I'm going to vote.
Oh, yeah. No, there's tons. Well, I find it's not the woman I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's
because people
make babies, because almost everybody is involved in the process of making babies in one way or another, and so it's never an abstract question to anybody.
So the thing that moves me to cast my vote, you're telling me, is, you know, so I can fornicate liberally and not have the consequences of it. But
I think there's also a story that goes along with that, a narrative of I'm getting oppressed if you take this away from me, killing
my baby.
Yeah, because it's related to sex.
Well, sex
is the magic thing that makes everything.
Well, yeah, I desire it, so I have a right to
Gloria Steinem wrote on this, I think, as well as anybody did, on arguing that position, where she basically just said, look at all of these women whose lives were derailed by unexpected pregnancy. So I don't think it's even, I want abortion so I can fornicate, like, liberally. I think it's actually taken for granted humans are just animals and they're going to fornicate liberally. Like, people don't have self-control. They can't say no. And so therefore we need abortion, because otherwise women are going to be oppressed because they're going to be at home raising kids rather than working for major corporations, like everyone's mentioned.
Mother is happier turning a crank that increases the balance in somebody's bank.
That's got to be Chesterton.
It is. Yeah.
I forgot something that I was supposed to do at the beginning of the show, so I'm going to do it now. We are going to do a new thing for Flannel Panel. We are going to have a live poll that anyone who is listening can participate in, and we will give the results of the poll as the show goes. And then it'll also help us to discuss one of the topics we're going to get to. We are going to get to talking about Dignitas Infinita, the document from the Vatican on infinite dignity. And so we have a poll question about it. And here's how you can participate in the poll question. First of all, I think Darren's going to hit the button right now. And anybody who's on the app, anybody who's got our app on their phone, if you have notifications on, you're going to get the notification right now that you can participate in our poll. If you're watching on YouTube, or if you can get to YouTube, the poll is also pinned to the top of the live chat. You can participate in the poll. We'll get to that shortly, but I want to get that out there now so that we'll have some poll results when we get to talking about Dignitas Infinita. If you'd like to participate in our poll, either go to the app or go to YouTube and check at the top of the YouTube feed where the poll is pinned to the top of the live chat. But before we get to talking about Dignitas Infinita, which I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm looking to you, Joe, for some confirmation that I
was intentionally not answering.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
All right. but I want to talk about, and you know, I let me ask you both this question, first of all. How do you think Jesus feels about Schadenfreude? Do you think that he...
against.
Do you think he's against Schadenfreude? Because I'm experiencing
Is that the good feeling you get when
someone else experiences something bad? Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we're indebted to the Germans for this word. I mean, only Germany seems to have a word for this.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you want an actually nuanced theological answer to this?
Yes.
So it is okay in certain circumstances to rejoice at another's downfall if it's measured in the right way. So, for instance, if a bad candidate loses, you can be glad they lost.
Oh.
Not out of malice, but out of a love for the good and a hatred of the evil they were trying to do. That sort of thing is actually okay. Aquinas makes like a threefold
distinction. That's not what I'm having. I just want you to know.
Okay.
That's not what I'm having. I'm having a different kind of Schadenfreude.
Yeah. No, so in the treatment of envy, he distinguishes between these kind of narrow cases where it's like, oh, yeah. Even though that kind of looks like envy, that kind of looks like Schadenfreude, that's actually fine. But then there's the other stuff, which it sounds like you might be experiencing.
Well, so. I'd like to bring up a story about National Public Radio. And for those of you around the world...
Oh, I thought your Schadenfreude was somehow related to infinite dignity.
Oh, no, no. We're going to get to infinite dignity.
Okay.
By the way,
sounds to me like one of those... big United States military operations.
Operation Infinite Dignity. I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. And as I was about to say, for those of you listening around the world, we have a thing in the United States called National Public Radio, which is propaganda for the extreme left paid for by the American taxpayers. And Many times on this show, we have made fun of National Public Radio. And it is actually one of my favorite pastimes because they say the looniest things. They have been cheerleading for moral decline for decades. Particularly, the most irksome thing is the absolute refusal that any negative word be uttered against the transgender ideology. They will not tolerate anybody saying, "Meh, is this a good idea?" You know, just if you shrug your shoulders and go, "Yeah," then you are the Antichrist if they believed in Christ. And so Uri Berliner, a former member of the NPR family, 25 years of reporting, came out and said—
Oh, I think he still works there.
Oh, you do?
Oh, he— oh,
You
he,
have not seen the news today.
Oh, okay. He was shown the— well, I'm not— I was surprised. Okay.
Yeah, right. He criticized his beloved NPR, and his criticisms are very interesting.
I recommend this article to our listeners.
You can read it in the Free Press. That's Barry Weiss's media outlet, and— Barry Weiss, of course, is famous for leaving the New York Times because she said the New York Times wasn't interested in news anymore. They were just interested in pushing propaganda. So she started— both of these are left-wing people. Neither of these is a right-wing person. These are left-wing people who have gotten sick of media outlets who are not just left-wing. I mean, Uri Berliner says he's very comfortable being a left-wing person. He just doesn't want to do propaganda. He wanted to do news, and he's tired of the propaganda.
Well, journalism. He makes the point that he's a journalist, and journalists follow evidence, and then they accept the conclusions.
So had you heard about this, Joe? Had you heard about this?
I actually had read his original article. I didn't hear about the follow-up.
Oh yeah. So then he was suspended by NPR, and then he resigned today from NPR. He had become very, very unpopular for saying things like there were 87 people in the NPR newsroom who were registered Democrats, and zero people who were registered Republicans. Again, I remind you, I don't care about that. I don't care how many Democrats or Republicans you have in your newsroom. I just don't think taxpayers should pay for one side ridiculing the other and twisting the news.
Well, and one of the points he was making is that this North Star, as they called it, of diversity, the guiding light of,
right.
Of NPR, he says, we're not following diversity if everyone thinks like a left-wing Democrat.
Right.
I mean, the whole point of diversity on paper is you get people from a variety of backgrounds and different sexes, originally just two, but it's gotten a lot more interesting lately.
And, there used and the to whole be just point two is, sexes. I think you're... wait, you're in Missouri, right?
I am.
Yeah, so they're still just two sexes in Missouri. California, we have 73. But I think you still just have two in Missouri.
I'm going to avoid making any show me state jokes.
Oh, but... no. You didn't avoid it.
Right. Apophatically. So my point is, the whole point of all of this diversity on paper was to get at diversity of ideas. But when you get 87 people with the same views of the world, they just happen to have different color skin or different bodies.
Yeah.
That's not any kind of meaningful diversity on the output. You might as well just clone one person 87 times. And so I do have a problem with it in that I think, regardless of the respective merits of the two parties, having an echo chamber where only one person's perspective multiplied 87 times gets repeated makes everyone dumber.
Yeah.
And I think it can happen in any kind of cultural context, on the left, on the right, whatever. Like you said at the start of the show, there's something that's actually gained, I think, when we disagree, the three of us. If we all felt the need to be in ideological lockstep on everything, it'd be a worse show, and we wouldn't see, you know, good perspectives and good ideas.
It's a real—
and so I think likewise, when NPR kind of goes into this ideological lockstep, and it's not just that it's a waste of taxpayer dollars, it is that.
And we're not even journalists.
It's also the waste of an actual institution. Like, that's right.
Like, we're doing a different job than a journalist. So, I mean, we are advocacy media. We believe in Jesus. We mm-hmm. believe that he's the Son of God, come to save us from our sins and from death, and died on the cross for us. And so we're an advocacy media, and we're more diverse than NPR is. And they're just supposed to be journalists.
Can I point out a really bizarre connection all of these stories are going to have?
Yeah, what
so
is
it? So the first story is about Bill Maher. The second one is about NPR, whose president is named Catherine Maher.
Yes.
And I think we're going to eventually get into talking about Bishop Marmari.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And I'm just saying, there's a lot of, like, Marmar, Marmari.
There is a conspiracy
stories.
Here somewhere underneath this.
Lattice of coincidence.
This needs to, there's no such thing as coincidence. Have you ever watched any
The lattice of coincidence.
Science.
Repo Man. It is a special triumph of the propagandists when they can take a word and have it mean the exact opposite of what it means.
Gender affirming care?
Well, care yeah. Is a good one. Choice means killing. Border means sieve. Diversity means, as Joe says, lockstep. There are other examples, but it is especially striking.
Why don't they should just call it Oceana News? Do you get that reference, Joe? Or are you too young for that? Oceana?
Yeah, 1984. I saw it on London's East End. I didn't read the book, I have to admit.
I think there's some real gems in this article. The first is he identifies three stories that everyone else knew were actual stories or non-stories. So yeah. Russian interference was not a story.
Right.
Hunter Biden's laptop was in fact a story, but the New York Post broke it, so it's not.
The best one is that they the COVID one where they refused to whatever good reporting they did, they utterly shut down the possibility that this came from a scientific lab.
Which, by the way, is now the accepted explanation.
Which is weird though, because what's more racist to say? The Chinese are so gross that diseases are coming out of their food markets, or the Chinese are so smart they invented this in a lab. Like, which one of those is more racist? And they tried to convince everyone that it's racist to say that they invented it in a laboratory, which, I mean, obviously they did. I don't think they did it on purpose. I'm not saying that.
But, I mean, he gives the data of how heavily invested in these three narratives NPR was. And then when it was revealed, they just went radio silent on it.
But I got to say, and we'll have to do this when we come back from the break, I think that Berliner pulled his punches a little bit. And because the transgender story is the more obvious one. Every single day for years, NPR had to have some story on the beauty of transgender ideology. They were wrong about it. They've destroyed countless lives with their lies. And Berliner didn't call him out. So we'll talk about a little bit more about that when we come back. Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
At EWTN Radio, you're family. And because you're a part of our family, we value your opinions on what you hear on EWTN. You can call our listener comment line 24/7 at 205-795-5773. We value your comments, your questions, and any suggestions you may have to make EWTN Radio even better. 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Barry Weiss, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, an editor for the Wall Street Journal, who became a reporter for the New York Times and left the New York Times famously because she said they didn't do news anymore, basically. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but she wanted to do news. She didn't want to do propaganda, so she left the New York Times. She has a big interview on her outlet, The Free Press, with Uri Berliner, who's a 25-year veteran of National Public Radio in the United States. And Berliner is very brave, and it did, in fact, lose his job over this, and I'm sure lost many friendships and all that. So I don't mean to imply that. I didn't mean to imply before we went to the break that I hold him in low esteem for having done this. I just didn't think that his emphasis on the Russia thing, on Hunter Biden, and on COVID, and then he also got into the DEI stuff. He did a deep dive into their DEI stuff. I think the most scandalous thing that NPR fell for, the most scandalous foolishness that they fell for, was the transgender nonsense, which is now being debunked everywhere that it's been tried. But you said he did mention it.
Well,
in the
he says there that they were specifically instructed not to use the expression biological sex.
So we're supposed to pretend like there's no biology.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, but that's as far as he took it.
Well, Barry Weiss.
It's quite an admission for a guy
who's been breathing
that air for as long as he has.
And I hope he gets $1 billion book deal out of this whole thing, because it's really brave what he did. Actually, Barry Weiss, however, in interviewing him at the beginning of her interview, she said, "How did NPR lose its way? Why and how did it change? And why are so few brave enough to talk about it in public?" And I thought, she doesn't listen to the flannel panel. We've been brave, Barry Weiss. We have been brave enough to talk about it for years on the flannel panel.
I think NPR's zenith was with Garrison Keillor and Prairie Home Companion. And after his fall from grace, it just started to topple. But even then, I mean, of course, that show ran for decades. And the NPR that was when he started and when he finished had already come well down this path. He kind of tacks a lot of this to COVID and George Floyd and Trump. And to be sure, it picked up steam. But I would like to see a similar piece of reporting, by the way, from someone who was at the Fox News Channel back when Pat Buchanan and Michael Kinsley had Crossfire. Or if you go even further back when Buckley had
Firing Line,
or there was a local show in D.C. called Agronsky and Company, and there was a time actually left or right where the political discourse was intelligent.
But isn't it weird that now it's not just a matter of. There seems to be something in the water about not just winning arguments, but utterly delegitimizing anybody who doesn't agree with you.
I can speak to that.
Go ahead, Joe.
There's a great book on this subject called The Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukasoff, where they're both involved in free speech activism on campus. Lukasoff's a libertarian. Haidt is like a moderate liberal. And so neither are writing, from the right, as it were. But they were saying, until about 2015, it was regularly them and the students teamed up against these overweening administrations who wanted to protect people with the PC speech codes from the 1990s and all this. And then around 2015, they said that they experienced the students switching sides, where now the students were actually resentful of the idea of free speech and felt the need to be protected from it by administrations. And so they basically devote a book to unpacking why this is. And one of the great lies that they uncover is this idea that words are the worst thing. Speech is really dangerous and can hurt you. And a lot of this comes from a misuse of the language of trauma and taking psychological terms poorly understood, that you have trigger warnings and you have trauma and you have all these things. And so the idea is like, well, you don't want to expose someone to a controversial idea or figure because that might traumatize them. And so out of a well-meaning attempt to protect people, you have even things like the anti-bullying movement that really instills this fear of mean words. And so you have a generation raised thinking that's like the worst thing that can happen. And in the more extreme cases in the 2010s, you see students resorting to physical violence because that's not the real violence. Bad ideas are the violence. So you can use whatever self-defense you need to like run a speaker off campus if they have different thoughts than you. And this is just like a bizarre place to end up. I don't think this was where the people pushing these ideas intended the culture to go, but we absolutely experienced it. But more than that, they also identify a sort of overbearing approach to parenting. And so there's a slogan in the beginning of the book that we've tried to live by in our house, which is don't prepare the road for your child, prepare your child for the road. And so for a whole range of reasons, parents have been more cautious and anxious now. And so Jonathan Haidt, when he does public speaking, will ask different generations how old they were when they were first allowed to walk to and from school. And the older generations is like 5. And then it's like 8. And then
Five. I was 5 walking to school.
Yeah.
And I had to walk across a busy street.
Wilson Lane.
I didn't live near Wilson
I had to
Lane.
Walk across Wilson Lane. it had a double yellow line.
Yeah. This I I actually am still kind of mad at my parents about this. Like, they made me walk across a really busy street. Yeah. I mean, I became a tough and capable individual who lived a fruitful life, but I'm still mad about being made to walk across the street. Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
So for the – I'm glad you spoke into this. For the younger generation, it's the teenage years when they're first allowed to anywhere without their parents. I mean, there are cases of the police being called for a family in which the 12-year-old was left at home babysitting their younger siblings. Man. A 12-year-old.
That's insane.
Like, 12-year-olds, even in my generation, were doing babysitting. Like, people would pay them to come watch strangers' kids.
Yeah.
And so the point they make is, if you are entering college having met the developmental milestones of a 5-year-old, it's not a shock that you need a whole range of support systems to feel like you can navigate into the real world. And this is the number one driver for the exploding cost in college. So when you look at the increased costs of college, so only about a third of colleges are even profitable, which is shocking given how insanely expensive they are. And then you look at where the increased costs have gone, and it's almost all administration. There's not a lot more teachers. The teachers aren't making more money. You have actually a growing number of adjuncts making very low wages, and a ton of different people who are in various ways responsible for coddling and babysitting your kids because you didn't help them experience the real world. That generation, now they're getting out into the real world, and they're terrified by the idea that you might have a different view as them. Now, I'm speaking in very broad generalities. If you want like a more nuanced take, read the book. But I would point to that and say there is a huge problem that is it's not just a political thing. It's a real failure to equip the generation coming up in the world.
That's what we have to remember is it's not their fault. These 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds who can't handle anything, it's not their fault. They were raised wrong. Wrongly, I know is the word, but they were a whole society failed them. It raised them in front of a television that terrified them about what was out there in the world, and it did not equip them to deal with the real world. And it didn't say, you know, when you're 8 years old, yeah, you can walk to the store and buy something and come back. I mean, go ahead.
Right.
You know, take your cousin with you or something.
In front of screens with social media that have been shown to produce exploding rates of anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
So these are anxious, unhappy, unprepared kids who are being sent out into the world. And we see that. Like, there's
and now they're all running NPR.
Right.
I mean, I think they actually are running NPR. I think those are the people who are running it. I got to do this, Joe.
Running it into something.
All right. Our quiz question. I mean, it's not called a quiz. What's it called? What are we doing?
Poll.
A poll question. Our poll question, because now we're doing live polls during the Flannel Panel show, which I'm super excited about. And the question is, did you read Dignitas Infinita? Did you read it? And we have some answers in, but you can still... participate in our poll, and I'm going to tell you what the choices are in a second. But the way you can do it is just go to YouTube, and you go to YouTube, and in the live chat, it is pinned at the top. Can they still go to the app, or just go to YouTube? All right, just go to YouTube. The app is really busy. Go to YouTube. Pinned at the top of the live chat is this question: did you read Dignitas Infinita? And here's your choices: yes, all of it, some of it. Didn't read it, and final answer, didn't read it, but I have a strong opinion about it. Those are your choices. Go and vote now. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll continue with the Flannel Panel. And if you're like, man, I enjoy this show. I enjoy this Flannel Panel. This is a very intelligent conversation. I wish I could hang out with these guys on a boat.
Have a beer with them.
Just go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com, CatholicAnswersCruise.com, and find out about the big cruise. All three of us will be there. We're going to do a live Flannel Panel on the boat. It's called a ship. I know it's a ship. Just go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com, find out about it. We're June 29th. We're leaving from Montreal. We'll go to Quebec. We'll also visit Quebec. And
Halifax.
Halifax, Nova Scotia, Sydney. Bahama, Maine, and Boston. We'd love it if you'd come.
Cy Kellett's birthplace. We're going to drive.
No, I wasn't born in Boston.
Oh.
I was born in Philadelphia. I was born in the Philadelphia Naval Hospital.
This explains so much.
Yes. Philadelphia. All right. Right back with more Flannel Panel. Take the quiz. Go to YouTube. Take it. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.